Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hello and welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And I am so thrilled, and I'll probably start crying because that's what I always do, to be here with my good friend, Raisha Bivens. Raisha's story, oh my God, I can't wait to hear it. She's just a role model for courage, you know, going where people don't go. When you hear her story, I don't want to give any of it away, but you'll just be incredibly inspired and moved by who she is. So thank you, Raisha, for being here and for being willing to say what people don't talk about. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So in our little texting back and forth, you talked about some of your challenges as a teenager. One, the first one was with depression, and I don't know where the other part, and I don't know if the depression was part of the other, but you want to cover it in the way that you would like to, so people can get a feel for what you've overcome.
Yeah. So I think, you know, from a young age, well, first of all, I'm from Bridgeport, Connecticut. And, you know, I was born in Norwalk, raised in Bridgeport. And, you know, from a young age, myself and my family started dealing with some challenges, some of which were poverty. I think I was always, you know, someone that was considered, you know, gifted and talented in terms of educational standards. But from a young age, probably around middle school, I started to really feel depressed and not feel good about, you know, who I was, right? I was kind of shy, kind of on the more quiet side. And I went through some trauma in my life. You know, I actually experienced, you know, a molestation that, you know, it happened once, but that impacted me. That impacted, you know, my identity and how I saw myself. And even before that, I was struggling. I was struggling to accept who I was and to have a sense of belonging. You know, I sort of felt like an outsider growing up. And all of that contributed to me experiencing, you know, depression. And
So the molestation happened before the depression. Or was it already? I'm just wondering if that was, I mean, me and my no degrees of analyzing here, but just like for my mind, I wanted to know if that's what kind of triggered the depression or if that was during it or after it. Just to be curious.
Yeah, I think after it definitely got worse. Okay. I think I might have been dealing with it before, not as severely, you know, in terms of like not accepting myself and feeling kind of bad about who I was. I think it definitely triggered it to get worse. Yeah.
Okay. Whew. Okay. And then what?
Yeah. And I think, you know, went through it. I was in therapy for a very short time when I was a teenager, and I did try medications for a very short time. And I, you know, I got through, right? Like I, you know, played basketball in high school. I had my circle of friends that supported me. You know, but for a while, for a long time, I would say at least 10 to 15 years, I struggled with what they would call dysthymic disorder, which is a reoccurring form of depression that kind of happens in cycles. And, you know, I remember entering therapy again in my mid-20s. And that was like the first time that I really started to feel better. And, you know, when I actually participated and self-development work, you know, called the Landmark Forum. It was really the first time that I felt like I had gotten a handle on my depression in a way that I could actually stop the cycles from happening, right? Like I'm a human being. I experience sadness. There are still times where sometimes I might feel the depression getting triggered, but to be at the point where I was before, where sometimes I would feel hopeless, I don't experience that anymore. And that has been, you know, for at least 10 years, probably a little longer. You know, thanks to the self-development work that I've done in Landmark, the therapy work, and it's actually part of the reason why I've become a therapist. And you know, there were a lot of things that stopped me at any point here,
Yeah,
Hillary.
let me just, can I just ask you one question? Because I
Yeah.
mean, I have moments of hopelessness. I mean, don't, this morning I woke up like, and, I've done the same work as you. So I feel I have tools. I've been spending years developing tools to kind of, I call it the left side of life, where everything is hopeless and wrong and blah, blah, blah. And then going back over to here. So I feel like I have tools for that when I can recognize it. When you say you felt hopeless, like was it, and again, I don't understand depression, so that's why I'm asking. Like, how does someone know it's just a normal, yeah, I'm having a hopeless day, I'm powerless, whatever, all that stuff, versus there's something wrong and I gotta deal with, like, is it 'cause you can't shake it? Like, what does that look like? I mean, I'm asking for me 'cause I'm curious.
Very good question. I think depression, really one of the ways that it's assessed to know if it's clinical depression and you really need to have more intervention is how much it impacts your functioning, right? So if from day to day you're having difficulty you know, completing tasks, or you're not experiencing enjoyment in things that you used to experience enjoyment in, you know, or you're like from on a daily basis, you know, struggling with sleeping or not being able to stay asleep. You know, there's actually screenings that, you know, most therapists utilize and perform to really get a more objective, measurable like number, right? To know like how bad is your depression, and you know, for you to be clinically depressed. There are screenings that can better guide that, but it's more about your functioning. You know, is this interfering with your functioning, you know, over
So
the past?
it's not just a passing feeling. It's
Correct.
okay. All right, cool. All right. And then you had mentioned the other thing. I don't know if you want to talk about that before we go on, the teenage, I want to let you tell the story.
Remind me, I don't what
Teenage
the
mother, teenage young mother.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so here I am, you know, entering college, you know, still dealing with the depression on and off, but really happy to, you know, have a sense of freedom and a sense of independence. And so I went to college, and
Where did you go?
I
Where'd you
went to
go look?
Central Connecticut State University in New Britain.
Okay, did you stay there? You were an overnight student.
Yes, I
Okay, so
stayed.
you're out of Bridgeport. Okay, go ahead.
I moved right into the dorm. Originally thought I would go out of state somewhere, but that ended up being the best place for me, the most financial aid. So I went there, moved in, and you know, still had, you know, these kind of issues with myself lingering against the surface, underneath the surface. And I started exploring, right? Like I started dating, being with different men, exploring, and I was not protecting myself. You know, I didn't, or I should say I didn't always protect myself. And I found myself, you know, pregnant. You know, I became pregnant as a sophomore in college. I actually grew up in a really religious Christian household, and it was actually something that really empowered me in the face of the trauma and the things we dealt with. My foundation with God and Christianity was something that empowered me. And so when I became pregnant, this was something else that really triggered my self-disappointment and depression, because I was always, that was one thing my mother did talk to me about, was, you know, waiting till I was married to have sex, you know, being abstinent and the benefits of that. And you know, I was disappointed. I was disappointed in myself when that happened. I knew my mother would be disappointed. I thought about an abortion, and you know, I ended up, you know, I was very close to the marker when you're not supposed to have, you know, legally in Connecticut, you can't have an abortion anymore. And, you know, I just chose to really go forward, you know, with the pregnancy, not necessarily knowing how I was going to make it work, but knowing that I was really committed to finishing college. I think at that point I went to college, knowing that I wanted to study like psychology or social work, but I think at that point in my sophomore year, I was clear that I wanted to do social work, and you know, definitely went through a period of devastation at that point. But once I made the decision to have my child, I made a decision. I also made a choice that I was not going to stop school. I wasn't going to stop college, and I began sharing with my friends. I had developed, you know, friends on campus, and you know, once I ha got pregnant, and actually, I developed even more friends, and I really created this circle of women, like probably 9 or 10 women that, you know, gathered around. They really supported me. You know, I remember talking to them about the fact that I didn't want to take time off when I gave birth to my daughter, and like every single person in my circle, in my community, they started like pitching in. Like we made a plan where they were going to come over my house to help me help babysit my daughter. And I'm getting moved because I don't share about this a lot, and it's really moving. And they came to my house. They babysat my daughter. I mean, she was a newborn. I went back to school. She was like 2 or 3 weeks. Her birthday is August 13th. And, you know, they really pitched in. You know, I remember bringing my daughter to the campus at Central Connecticut. I had gotten involved with the Women's Center as a social work major. You always have to do internships every semester. And one of my internships was the Women's Center, and I developed such a bond with the director that she offered to have me bring my daughter to the Women's Center. While, you know, so I would bring my daughter to campus with me, and these women would watch her, and I did everything. Like at that point when I, you know, decided I wasn't going to take time off, it became really clear to me that, thank you for this space. It became very clear to me that the biggest difference that I could make for my daughter was going to be through the way that I lived my life. And I remember wanting to do so much, knowing that there was so much possible for me on the campus to contribute to. And before I got pregnant with my daughter, I was a, like, I let fear stop me a lot. And when I got pregnant and gave birth to my daughter, I made a choice that I was going to go after every single thing that I wanted to, that I wasn't going to let fear stop me. And, you know, it was like I had fun before I had her. I was involved in things, but it was like this blossoming of a flower. Like I did everything that I wanted to. Like I remember being involved with the Black Student Union on campus. And if I really look, that is really where my activism started, right? You'll hear me touch upon my brother, but like, I was in a leadership role on the Black Student Union and would do organizing on campus to really empower that community of people. You know, I used to co-facilitate this support group for women called United Sisters, you know, and it was for women of color to help women of color be empowered and deal with their trauma and talk about issues that they were facing as college students and have support. And you know, I did everything that I ever wanted to do. I developed a program for high schoolers to really promote, you know, students of color in urban areas to go to college and see that that was possible. So these were like things I did, and becoming pregnant with my daughter at 19 really gave me the courage to go after everything that I want and know that, you know, I didn't have to be stopped. So I had this baby on my hip, you know, and I would go to class and go here and, you know, be on campus with her. And I think people were really inspired by that. And you know, the circle of women, I'm forever in gratitude and you know, have so much thanks and love to them for the support that they showed me and my daughter that I wouldn't have been able to do all that without them, their support. So yeah. So thank you for asking that.
Yeah, that, are you still in touch with them?
Yeah, most of them I'm still in touch with. Yep, I've seen a few of them a couple months ago, and you know, relationships and circles of women go through things, but I'm thankful to say, like, you know, we've been able to like kind of resolve any bumps in the road for the most part, and yeah, just grateful to have many of them still in my life, you know. So yeah,
And your daughter is how old now?
My daughter is 19, so she's the age that I was when I had her. And yeah, it's just a blessing to she's in college now. You know, she goes to Emmanuel College in Boston and is pursuing her dreams, playing high school college basketball, which is something she re worked really hard on and had to overcome, you know, some of her own self-doubt to achieve that, you know, and just, you know, went from like not starting, you know, last year as a freshman in basketball to now she's starting, you know, she's a starting player. And a lot of these principles that I've used to transform my own life, you know, the Landmark Forum and therapy and coaching, like I support her in that same way. And it's just a gift to see her step into her dreams and her own power and purpose. So.
Wow, that's incredible. All right. So back to, you get pregnant and you said you were, it was more, I forget how you said it, but you were feeling
Yes.
bad about yourself, like you messed up or something. How, obviously, it seems like the birth of your daughter gave you the courage to do all these amazing things, still in college. How did you let go of that? Like, if for someone else who may, be
Yeah.
experiencing that, maybe they're pregnant now, or they're blaming them, whatever. How did
Yes.
you get past that?
Yeah, so really good question. I think
Because you could have
I
gone
think
down
I
the other way. You could have gone home, felt sorry for yourself, and joined the life of poverty, or whatever.
yeah.
You could have given up, but you didn't. You
Yeah.
went the other way. So, yeah,
How to do that. Yeah.
go ahead.
I think I made, looking back, I made a choice to forgive myself, you know, to not, you know, wallow in the sadness and despair. And like, I made a choice to not only forgive myself, but that a commitment that this was gonna work, that I wasn't gonna let anything stop me from being the person that I wanted to be in the world, you know, from making a difference for people, from making a difference for my daughter. That was the biggest thing that I shifted it from like, this was something wrong or this was a mistake, so this was an opportunity to make a difference for the world and to lead the way for my daughter through my actions. And that was like the biggest thing for me, knowing that I had a little girl that was going to be looking to mommy to see what was possible in her life. And I shifted, you know, my context from this was, you know, me failing to like this was an opportunity to make a difference for my daughter and make a difference for the world by not giving up.
And how
Yeah.
does the 19-year-old, I mean, I know you did the Landmark Forum and I could get after that making that decision, but how did you have that in you to even know? I mean, I was just so focused on myself and I wasn't thinking about activism or,
Yeah.
playing squash, getting through the day and drinking with my friends. Like what had you be that? Do you have any idea? I mean, maybe it's something you can't answer,
Yeah.
but I'm wondering, who are you? No, just kidding. But in a great way,
No,
like really in a
I,
great way.
yeah, no, that's a great question. Ironically, you know, I think it was my mother did a lot of things right. She did a lot of things right. She really instilled from me from a young age that I could fulfill on anything that I wanted. Anything. If I look at where that desire to be an activist and an advocate was birthed in me, it was when I was like a child. You know, I remember loving to read and, you know, like her knowing that and like getting me all these books on the civil rights movement and raising me in the environment of the church. Like I was actually raised in an environment where my mother let me know and instilled in me constantly that I could do anything, you know, anything that I wanted. And she supported me with a lot of dreams, even as a child. And so, you know, ironically, even though I knew she would be disappointed, and because she was a young mother, she had me at 18, you know. Yeah, so she didn't want me to repeat that cycle because she knew what it was like, even though, you know, it was difficult for her, but she pushed through with me. You know, she instilled that in me that I can do anything that I want, and even in the face of difficulties, challenges, and hardship, and you know, being raised, you know, because of her leadership, being raised around the church, you know, the values that were instilled is that hope is always possible. You know, no matter what, hope is always possible. So ironically, she instilled that in me, you know, not to give up, not to lose hope. And I was able to rest on those values in that situation. And yeah, that was it. That was what carried me through.
Whew. All right. So we've gotten to we have a few more minutes in this half. I call it before intermission. Yeah. So okay. So you got out of you graduated college, and your daughter's now a couple years old. And then where did you go from there?
When I was in college, and got so connected to my purpose, and excuse me, I ended up getting into a lot of like fashion and the arts when I was a senior in college. I started, being in fashion shows, and I found that really healing. And then at the same time, as I was like discovering that artistic side of myself, I decided to get my master's in social work right after college. So I went from undergrad to pursuing my master's in social work at UConn. And honestly, that was like me just stepping right into my purpose. And I can remember like dealing with another depression, because I think that was triggered by the transition. Here I was, I went from this big community of women and friends and support to like in college to, not a lot of my friends went right on to get their master's or even at the same school. So even though I knew that was my purpose to get my master's, the depression came up again, right? And I ended up just slowing the pace down, taking 3 years to get my master's rather than two. And I delved fully into fashion at the time. I actually, at one point was considering getting a degree in fashion, because I found that to be really healing when I was dealing with the depression. Fashion styling, helping other people be their best selves through how they look. And so I actually pursued that and became a stylist, and was hired to do that in Connecticut while I was still pursuing my master's, and hosted a lot of shows, and that became like a this other outlet of expression for me, and really making a difference for people.
Were you
And yeah.
what? So when you say that, I'm wondering, were you a model? Like, were you the one going down the runway? Were
Yeah, I
you like,
yeah.
how did what were you doing? I mean, that is so foreign to me. It's like I need someone to dress me. So
Yes,
what were you doing?
I did do a lot of modeling in the beginning, but what I really loved was styling people. So that is like helping people dress, to be their best selves, helping them to have a
Wow.
makeover where they're more aligned, who they're when they dress up, who they are, who they're being is more aligned with who they were really are, their
Wow.
purpose, their being. So I would like, style people who wanted to have like this elevated way that they presented themselves to the world, right? Or I would also do it with like models for photo shoots. Every model needs a portfolio. Artists need, visuals. They need media, to represent themselves. And so I did styling for a while, where I would style individual clients, and then I created my own company where we targeted like models, fashion designers, and music artists. And we not only styled them for photo shoots, we did, like marketing for them. Like we would do the whole package, right? Photos, videos, so that they would have this media to market themselves. And so
Wow.
yeah, that
Now,
was just like a huge love. Yeah.
were you working for a company? Like, how did you do this? You're 22 years old. Did you just start it yourself? I mean,
Yeah. I started it myself,
that's
and
amazing.
yeah, thank you. And the
Like, how
key
do you
really
just get
was
clients? I mean, how does that happen? You
so
know? And you're at
this
school, right? With a baby.
yeah
And you're
yeah
doing that. That's
I was in
amazing.
school pursuing my master's. What you're helping me realize is that there's this theme of community in my life, because in Connecticut, if you were to talk to people in New York at that time, when I was in my 20s and pursuing this, it was popular in New York, but nobody really knew about styling in Connecticut. Just like you're like, what is that? What? Tell me
Yeah.
more, right? But it was really like I began to connect with people in the fashion and the arts community in Connecticut who had similar goals. I connected with somebody else who wanted to be a stylist, and I can remember he invited me to co-host his first fashion show in Hartford. And from there, I just connected with more and more people, more designers, people that had those same dreams. And I remember having a friend from college who was successful in fashion styling, and I was like, well, how do I start? And he was like, create your portfolio, do a photo shoot. And that's what I did. I just listened to people. I asked and I listened to people, and started my own company, but became known in the community here in Connecticut. And that was how, I got clients. And just through sharing, right? Like this podcast
Wow.
is sharing. Like it's just sharing is like a
Yeah.
pathway to creating whatever we want. So that's how I did it. And yeah, any other questions before I keep keep talking.
Yeah, no, I love that.
Yeah.
We're about to go on our break, but just tell me like how old you were at this point that you were and how many years and how'd you go to college and have a baby? Like you, I know you just,
Yeah.
but it might seem easy now, but to some like me, I'm just like,
Yeah.
what?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think like at this point when I was getting my master's, even when I was an undergrad, I did find like a childcare provider that
Okay.
I could rely on. And I had some support through some programs that the government offered to pay for childcare. So she was in a childcare with
Okay.
someone I really trusted, and she would be there when I was in classes. And then I just had a community of people that supported me, when I was doing these shows, and my family supported and babysitting. And it was I know looking back, it seems so easy, but I developed these connections and these a community of support
Yeah,
that
so it
supported
seems
me.
like you were networking and you would just ask, hey, how do I do this? And they would tell you and you would do it. So, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
That's exactly it.
That's so
So.
cool. Okay, good. Good. All right. So we'll take our little intermission break and then
Okay.
we'll come back and we'll hear more about how you got to where you are now.
Has social emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
All right. That's my daughter's company, so I always love hearing her voice.
Beautiful.
Yeah, she's in Brazil right now, just playing. So playing and working. So it's a good life. All right.
Beautiful.
So you're doing all that. How many years did you do the fashion? And then when did you do the Landmark Forum? And then how did
Yes.
all that transition now?
Yeah, I was like in fashion probably for like 9 years, 9 or 10 years, and I still, do it in a certain capacity in terms of blogging and with my husband and helping other people with media. I think it was around like 10 years or so in terms of having a company with that specific mission or styling and freelancing around that. And then I did the Landmark Forum. It was about 10 years ago that I did the Landmark Forum. And I found out about it through a friend, actually somebody I was dating, and things didn't work out with that person, but we kept connected, and I was so moved by the fact that they wanted to contribute to me, and I was moved by like who they were, that they were able to be vulnerable. And I had no idea what the forum was. I just knew that they thought it would make a difference in me, healing my relationship with my mother, that was in a different place at the time. And I trusted them and just, jumped in. So it's been 10 years, about 10 years.
Okay. All right. And so, all right. So when, so I don't know, I don't want to pry how old you were, but how old were you then? So I know you got through college, you're doing the fashion, your daughter's growing up.
Yeah, that's fine. I think so. I was about 30, I think. I'm 39 now, so I was about 30 or 29, maybe 29 when I
All
did the
right.
poem. Yeah.
Okay. So
Yeah.
then, I don't know if you want to say after that or whatever. I know you, we want to talk about your brother and what you've been doing for
Yeah.
him. How did all of that, I mean, you, to me, you were already powerful and doing what you wanted and amazing. I mean, if
Yeah.
you want to say how that impacted you, you can, or just, how you got into, your more political activism, obviously, with your brother
Sure.
and became a trauma therapist.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I definitely like was powerful and fulfilling, you know, things that were important to me. I think I took the landmark form because I still had, like, you know, something, things unresolved. And I also wanted to have more confidence as an entrepreneur, because at that point I was making a transition from doing like a fashion media with my boyfriend at the time to like focusing more on a creative company that empowered female entrepreneurs in the creative arts. And like, you know, I had the vision for it, I had the name, but I felt like really kind of paralyzed, and I wasn't really clear why I was not moving forward with that vision. And, you know, I discovered in the forum that I was just letting my fear stop me, right? So like the beautiful thing about the forum is like we all have areas that are working, and sometimes we have areas not working. So the forum really empowered me to bring that same courage that I had in other areas of life and confidence to the business that I wanted to start for female entrepreneurs in the creative arts. And just to knowing like that I could, that being limitless, right? Being limitless. And, you know, so I ended up going forward with that company for female entrepreneurs in the creative arts. And I just remember like being in my forum and like, you know, releasing all this content that I had, you know, was again, like I was modeling, I started modeling again. So I had a blog where I would combine my poetry with the images all to support and empower women. And, you know, I did that. I had a you know, a band at one point, you know, a children's band where I was empowering them, including my daughter. She's a singer. She was in the band as well, to just express their talents and make a difference. And, you know, I've gone on to produce music videos, short documentaries. These are all things that I dreamed of before the forum, but there was something there like, oh, I can't do that. I studied social work. So like it impacted me that way. But I went on to, you know, do more of the curriculum in Landmark and a leadership program. And I really like just got at the source of my depression and stopped experiencing those cycles after, you know, completing the curriculum with Landmark and doing the leadership program. And one of the things that happened, you know, while I was in my leadership program is that in Landmark is that my brother was going through a court case at the time. And he was, I got really connected in that program to the difference that I wanted to make on an even higher and more profound level. And I just remember supporting my brother through his court case. He didn't face any incarceration or anything at the time. But I left that program just really getting that I'm someone that makes a difference in the world and that I can make a difference wherever I want. And, you know, lo and behold, a couple of years later, probably, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years later, my brother ended up, you know, being incarcerated. And
for what?
Well, I don't really want to talk about his charge.
Okay.
He was,
I mean, to be incarcerated, you're either accused of something you did do or didn't do. And right. I mean, you don't just,
he was charged with an assault, which we ended up learning was self-defense.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll bring that back into the story later on, okay. But yeah, okay. he was charged with an assault.
Okay. But he was,
And my brother, you know, again, and while I was in the leadership program, we were always close, but what I would say transformed for me is that I realized I could make a difference in the way that I wanted to make with him. And he is someone that has experienced a lot of trauma through his life and, you know, been physically abused and has had a lot of people murdered in his life, you know, because that's just what he was exposed to in the community that we grew up in. And so I was very close to him when the incarceration happened, and I was devastated. You know, there was a moment where it happened and I was just like, you know, knowing his charges, knowing how much time he could possibly face. And I was at that point, you know, leading programs for Landmark. And I just remember I was scheduled to lead a program that day. And I really got that I wasn't responsible for his incarceration. Mm-hmm. And I created that through this situation, through him being incarcerated, that I was going to ensure that he got the treatment that he needed. Right. Because I was very clear as someone who at that point was, you know, a social worker for probably 9 years at that point, that everything that happened that led to his incarceration was connected to his well-being. Because I don't think I shared, you know, he has schizophrenia. My brother has post-traumatic stress disorder. from being a witness to brutal domestic violence that my mother experienced, and actually ran away from a brutal attack. But he was the one that came home to see her on the porch after an attack, where her former partner that she had left hid in her closet with an alcohol bottle. When she sat on the bed, jumped out and started beating her in the face with the glass alcohol bottle. He was the one. My brother came home at 13 years old and saw her on the porch after she had escaped with puddles of blood at his feet and at her feet. And he had to call the ambulance. He had to go get the nurse. He had to, you know, put, you know, towels on her face. And that was the source of him getting PTSD. That probably was what triggered his schizophrenia, which he didn't develop till he was in his 20s. But as a therapist and a licensed clinical social worker, we know that people can be predisposed to certain conditions, but it will only be triggered if they experience something in their environment. So, you know, I knew at that point when he was incarcerated that everything that led to his incarceration was linked with his well-being and his trauma, and not necessarily having the most appropriate treatment. He didn't have the treatment that he needed. And so really through all of the, you know, distinctions and the transformational training I had through Landmark, I was able to shift my context from this is going to, you know, be awful to like, I'm going to make sure that he gets the care that he needs through the situation. And that led me through. I remember after that day that I found out he was incarcerated and I led that program, you know, a week later, you know, I was at a cookout, you know, sitting with people that I didn't know. It was a friend of mine's cookout. And like, you know, 5 minutes later, you know, I'm just sharing, my brother just got incarcerated. And 5 minutes later, I'm finding out that the person across the table from me actually admitted my brother into the prison and was able to tell me he was okay.
Wow.
And that is the kind of inexplicable magic that happens when you live life based on, you know, your word, based on what you're declaring versus the circumstance. And that's what I did. I just, you know, I kept doing that throughout his incarceration, where I knew, you know, Connecticut, just for some context for people, Connecticut is a state that does recognize that it's most ethical to deter people, you know, who have criminal charges and mental illness from prison, right? Because 99% of the time, if people are incarcerated and they have a mental illness, it is linked to it's linked to their charge, right? So although Connecticut recognizes that it's most ethical to place people in treatment settings with criminal charges, in reality, they're not doing that. In reality, it's very subjective. It's not like a practice that they do with everybody that has mental health issues. And, you know, he was charged with a felony, right? So that was even a bigger barrier. But I kept living into he's going to get the care that he needs. And I just would have conversations, you know, with people, the social worker in his prison, the discharge planner, people all over the state of Connecticut about what is available, what other options, where else can he be while he's awaiting trial? Because his case was pre-trial for 3 years. And he was not convicted. He was incarcerated for 3 years without having a trial. And that is common, right? Like, part of the reason I became an advocate on a more, you know, statewide level is to impact those conditions for all people, because it's not just my brother who experienced circumstances like this, where they're held without a trial, they're not convicted, they're not found guilty, which legally you're supposed to have a right to a trial before, you know, really doing prison time. That's not how it happens in the state of Connecticut or in this country. So I was determined to really get him the treatment that he needs and get him into a treatment setting while he was awaiting trial. And there was a lot of barriers. You know, there were times where, I pretty much shared with my brother's attorney, this is what I wanted to accomplish. And she really supported me in being her partner. Actually, at some point when my brother was incarcerated, I became his conservator. So that is a legal appointment by the probate court, that legally I have the authority to make decisions for him from a healthcare standpoint, from a financial standpoint. He appointed me voluntarily, not because he's not competent to make his own decisions. And my brother's attorney saw me as a part of his defense team, right? Because of the conservatorship role. And, you know, it took something. It really took something. You know, we went back to the judge multiple times, you know, just even to get the judge to allow him to be evaluated to be in a treatment setting. Then he ended up being evaluated to be in a treatment setting while a pretrial treatment setting while he was awaiting trial, and they denied him. And, you know, really, if it wasn't for, you know, these transformational tools, I would have given up because people were telling me it wasn't possible. He was going to face 8 years. But I pretty much became like a co-attorney. And I remember looking at files related to the charges and, you know, just initially, you know, we were going to go a certain route in terms of there is a defense in Connecticut where you not guilty by reason of insanity, which is not the best. We were going to go that route and decided to, you know, do what's called the Alford's plea. And it just really was taking a stand that this was going to go the way that I wanted, that he was going to get the care that he needed, that allowed for us ultimately at almost the 3 year mark. It was during the height of COVID. My brother had diabetes. He was on insulin at 29 years old. He was becoming obese, which is not the way that he entered into the system. He was becoming more symptomatic, you know, with schizophrenia, you know, hearing voices, which he was in college before his incarceration and working a full-time job. So he was deteriorating. And at that point, you know, I just, you know, I went back to my brother's attorney and I just said, like, you know, this doesn't, you know, it doesn't work. You know, he's more at risk for COVID. And finally, at that point, a judge listened and lowered my brother's bonds. It was a very high bonds, you know, around 250,000. And, you know, I approached the bench and that day, you know, when I could see the judge still hesitating and just shared that, you know, if she allowed lowered his bond and allowed him to go into a treatment setting, that he wasn't even going to return to the community until he was stable. And a judge listened and granted it. And she had saw all of the actions I had taken over those 3 years, right, that were a part of the file, and just really, like, just acknowledge, you know, she acknowledged me that day, you know, for just my stand in the matter. And he ended up going to one of the best hospitals in Connecticut at that time. And then from there, I was able to advocate through his attorney and with the prosecution that he get the time he already served, you know, the 3 years for his charge. Mm-hmm. And never go back to prison. And they granted it. They agreed to it. And
so he never had a trial? He didn't need to have a trial?
It was pretty much, nope. They made that agreement for him to get the time served that he already served. And, you know, he is on something called mental health special parole. But again, this is all a part of the work that I did to see what would have the prosecution agree, right? Because what people want to know is that people are safe, right? And you know, they're not gonna, you know, pose any risk to the community. So I just, again, and relate the relationships that I made, you know, learning the system and learning how I could just really compel them that he would have the supports that he needed so that this wouldn't you know, nothing like what happened would happen again. And yeah,
that's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. And he's been
out. No, I mean, most people would have quit or not known where to go. Or, I mean, I'm like, I have so many questions, but, you know, I want to go on to what you're doing now, but, you know, just to just keep going no matter what at every dead end, you know, it seems easy now, but I remember when you were going through it, and congratulations. I mean, that's not a lot of people would do that. So thank you. Thank you for your work. You. Yeah. Yeah. Really amazing. Woo. So he's in good hands now, and he's out of prison, and yay.
Yeah, he's been in the community for the anniversary was on the 20th, because I will never forget the day. It was Inauguration Day 2 years ago.
Oh,
talking
wow.
about serendipity.
2 years.
And he's returning to college in 2 weeks to pursue his degree in marketing and fashion. He has a fashion line that my husband helped him start, and to empower people from our urban communities that they can overcome their trauma and that they can fulfill what they want. And that's his mission. And he's on that pathway. And he's on the road to, you know, being able to get his own apartment probably in another 6 months or so. He has a girlfriend that he loves dearly. And he's, you know, he has trauma. So that still comes up. But he's on the road to, he's been dealing with it powerfully and advocating for his own needs. So, yeah.
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
You know, it seems like, you know, you just talked to the judge, but no, I know it wasn't that easy when you were going through it. So, wow. Amazing. Okay. Amazing work. All right. So what else do you want to tell us? Let's see. We have 7 minutes, so we'll wrap it up in about five, but I know you're a trauma therapist. You want to talk about
Yes.
that? What is your, like, where do you want to see the world in 5 years, or what do you want to leave on the world? I know you're amazing. You're strong. You're an advocate for so many different things. What is the thing you would like to leave people with?
Yes. There's so much in that question. So first and foremost, like, I want to really leave people with that anything you want is possible. Anything you want is really possible. We sometimes doubt that. We sometimes hesitate, even when it comes to our own dreams and ideas and our own visions that I believe, you know, God, if you believe in God, you know, God places those, right? Or, you know, whatever you identify with spiritually, those are divine. There's a reason we have the visions and the ideas that we have. And so really anything you want is possible. And in terms of like the trajectory that I'm on now, I became a trauma therapist a little over 2 years ago because I wanted to help people get to the root of their trauma. And many people that are incarcerated actually have trauma that they've never addressed, which is linked to their incarceration. So that's part of my mission as a trauma therapist, is to help people heal from trauma and really, you know, take control over their lives. And I do serve people that are just as impacted and that have been incarcerated. I also serve women, and the group practice that I work in is targeted, you know, towards supporting people of color, and we serve all people. And I love that work. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. And I also everything that you heard me share about with my brother led me also to, you know, become a social justice advocate on a statewide level. And I'm really happy to share that I was a part of a legislative committee for the last, you know, 3 years, where we got a law not only passed in the Senate and the House in Connecticut, but signed into law last year. It's called the PROTECT Act, which restricts the use of solitary confinement in prisons, right? Which is considered torturous, you know, when you hold people in those in isolation for beyond 15 days, it's actually considered torturous by the United Nations. So,
wow.
Summary is, we got a law implemented in Connecticut last year to, you know, really ensure people get mental health treatment when they're incarcerated, and that they're truly rehabilitated, that they're not more damaged than when they entered, right? Because most people incarcerated return to the community, and the system, the way that it's designed, is harming them more and not rehabilitating them. So that's what that law does. And I'm also going to be going on to do national work, work on a national level to empower people that have been in solitary confinement to use their voice to fulfill their dreams. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff I can speak about because I'm still an entrepreneur, still creative, still making space for other creative entrepreneurs to fulfill their dreams through two other companies that I have. But what I really want to leave you with is, what you want is possible. Get the support that you need, start sharing, you know, about what it is that matters to you, because a lot of this that I shared about, I was able to fulfill it because I started sharing. You know, I manage in my daytime, I manage a cosmetic dental office, and I would share with my patients. That's how I met someone who was on this committee to end solitary confinement, and she ended up inviting me to be a part of the board, and one thing led to another, right? So share. You never know who you will connect with through sharing what you're committed to in your life, even if you don't know how to start.
And okay, just one last question.
Sure.
You, when you were young, you were shy, you said.
Yes.
How did you overcome that? I mean, you're so bold, you share, you know, all this stuff, you know, that's how you've met all these incredible connections to make all this happen. Is it hard for you to say it, or are you just used to it now? Like, does it just
No, come? I think, you know, one, you know, when I went to college, I really stepped into my voice and my purpose in a whole new way. And then the Landmark Forum helped me profoundly just develop this unlimited level of confidence and freedom around what I'm committed to. So both things, just, you know, just like, you know, finding my own voice, being out on my own, helped me to just be confident about what it is I have to say. And we only have one life, you know, and what we have to say matters. And that's how I relate to myself now, right? Whereas before, I think when I was struggling with the shyness and the lack of confidence, I didn't relate to myself as I mattered. And when I shifted that, there is no stopping me. And I don't think there's stopping anyone when you realize how much what you have to say matters. And that's where I live my life from. and why I don't struggle with that anymore. So
wow, that's really incredible. Well, thank you so much for what you've done. Well, not what you've done. I mean, it's incredible. It's not nothing. And I know it might seem, you know, effortless or easy to people, but I know, you know, at every step you could have said, meh, this is too hard, but you didn't. So really, thank you.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you for having me. I didn't realize, like, just being here got me present to everything that I've overcome and accomplished in a different way. So it's been a gift for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.